You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 489 of the Colombia Calling podcast. Last week's guest, Bruce McLean of BNB Colombia Tours, a very popular episode on travel here in the country. I urge you to listen to it. Some nice and some good news about Colombia and talking about the Country Image campaign, that is Colombia, the country of beauty, or el país de la belleza. So what do you think about that? We mull on that and plenty of other issues on the Colombia Calling podcast. This week's guest is none other than Diego Lacerna. Diego is running for re-election for city councillor in Bogota for the Green Party. He's been in the position for 4 years. This isn't an episode, let's say, bigging him up. It's an episode to kind of explain really what a city councillor here in Bogota does and, you know, what is the electoral process and how does he feel about this whole period. So, you know, it's an interesting one. What's he done in the last 4 years? Because most of you, of course, can't vote here in Colombia. But if you can, well, it's number four for the Green Party. That's the Alianza Verde in for Consejo de Bogotá, if you can. If you're a resident, a long-term resident, who can. He's a decent guy. And, I mean, decency is what we need in politics, isn't it? But anyhow, that's Diego Lacerna explaining to us a bit more about what it means to be a city councillor here in Bogota. Thank you, everyone, for signing up on patreon.com/Columbia Calling. Those of you who have done so to support the Columbia Calling podcast and, of course, Emily Hart's Columbia News Brief and her Tinto Talks, which I'm sure we'll be getting another episode of before long. You know, those go out, obviously, only to our sponsors, our supporters on Patreon. They go out a week or so early. Columbia at a Crossroads book that I have written with help from Dr. Andre Gomez Suarez, who's an expert in political science and Colombia's peace, obviously Dr. Peter Watson, who's at the University of Leeds and Sheffield at both, and he's written a bit about the importance of football and sports and dialogue. Who else have we got in? David Restrepo, who's talking about the history of coca as a sacred plant here in Colombia. We also have Professor Nicholas Forsons from the University of Essex, and he's done a very economics-related chapter. It's fun. This is not a guidebook, although it does go into sort of places to visit. It's largely based, primarily based on history, politics, and society in Colombia. I felt there was a contemporary lack in the market for that. It's been something I've been working on for a long time, and I'm hoping that within a week we have the ebook out for you. And for those of you on Patreon, you will get that for free. I haven't decided on the actual retail price for the ebook, but it's going to be around $11.99 or $12.99. It's been a lot of work. It's more than 400 pages, and there's a lot of information in there. So for those of you who are Colombianists or just even, you know, slightly interested in the region or indeed coming to travel and want to know a bit more about Colombia, it's coming there. This will go under the umbrella of my new publishing company, editorial company, that I've mentioned to you a couple of times here on the Columbia Calling podcast. It's called Fuller Vigil. So just look up Fuller, V-I-G-I-L, two surnames, .com. And you'll find up there our new releases. And very exciting, we also have Barry Maxwell's book. It's called Better Than Cocaine, Learning to Live, Love and Grow Coffee in Colombia. And that is going to be an ebook this week. So I'm going to send that out to some of you if you want to review it and take a look at it. There's a few of you out there who are going to write us blurbs for the publicity campaign, but that should be out by the end of the week and up on Amazon elsewhere. And then we'll be printing for the launch party on October the 30th. November the 30th. November the 30th. So very soon, really, we'll be printing for that. And there will be an event at the Casa 7322, which is a gallery space in the hip San Felipe district in Bogota. We'll have a conversatorio there with Barry and myself, talking about books, literature. There'll be a short conversatorio, but there will be drinks, there'll be artwork, there'll be fun. So I'm going to be sending out a save the date to many of you invitation, a save the date invitation reminder, 30th of November at the Casa 7322 in San Felipe, Bogota. And from there, then we'll work on other launch parties and speeches and so on. But we've got to get the first lot out. Very exciting indeed. Watch this space. Watch our social media. We're going to be setting up an Instagram account for Fuller Vigil very soon this week to start promoting everything as well. So exciting times here in Colombia with all of our little ventures. And on the Latin News podcast, the other one, we'll be talking about the authoritarian regime and never letting go there in Nicaragua in the next episode. The last episode was about Guyana and the game-changing oil wealth being generated in that country and what might happen. So, of course, check those out too if you're interested in the region. Thank you for listening to my nattering. We'll be back right away with, the Columbia News Brief with Emily Hart and then me talking to Diego Lacerna about Colombia's local, Bogota's local politics. So thank you again, and bye-bye. The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website, that's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories for the week of October 2nd, 2023. The president's son, Nicolas Petro, is to face trial for illicit enrichment and money laundering after his collaboration deal with the Colombian prosecutor disintegrated this week. The initial agreement with the prosecution implied an acknowledgement of the crimes he is accused of. He has, however, decided to face trial. He says the demands of the prosecutor were not in good faith and were made with the intention of making him a weapon against his father. Nicolas Petro faces allegations of having received large sums of money in 2022 from former drug trafficker Samuel Santander López Sierra, known as the Marlboro Man, and contractor Alfonso El Turco Hilsaca, who is reported to have had links to paramilitary groups. Petro allegedly told the two that the money was to finance his father's presidential campaign, but he then appropriated it for himself and his now ex-wife. There have subsequently been suggestions that some of that money did in fact enter the presidential campaign, though they are, as yet, unsubstantiated. Nicolas Petro has already parted ways with two different defense lawyers in this case. This week saw the deployment of over 200,000 soldiers and police as part of Planned Democracy, an operation to ensure the security of the regional elections to be held on October 29th. With around 4,500 polling stations giving special priority in the over 100 municipalities classified as being at extreme risk, uniformed security officials will be present at polling stations. They will also be deployed to key roads and infrastructure, and crews from the Air Assault Aviation Division will be available for emergent situations. Police stand accused of killing a 3-year-old girl who died after being caught in their indiscriminate shooting during an operation in Valle del Cauca. Officers claim it was in fact a shootout and that the bullet's origin is unclear, but the family's lawyer says that the police's carelessness and failure to aid the child once it had been hit are characteristic of police behaviour in the region, which discriminates against the Afro-descendant population. Protest broke out in the local area following the event. It was a week of demonstrations in Colombia as an indigenous Minga composed of more than 15,000 people marched to Bogotá to demand an end to the wave of violence which has disproportionately affected indigenous communities. The demands of the group included a solution which was not based in violence, not simply a political or military response, but a social response which includes the indigenous communities during planning stages. A group of protesters from the Misak, Nasa and Pijao communities also broke in to the headquarters of right-wing magazine Semana. They broke windows and illegally entered the building to protest their editorial line and alleged disinformation on indigenous issues. In particular, they asked controversial presenter Vicky Davila to stop lying to the country. The week also saw thousands join demonstrations in Bogotá in favour of government reforms and in favour of the legalisation of abortion. Colombia's Special Peace Tribunal, the JEP, has opened a case about sexual violence during the civil conflict. More than 35,000 people suffered this form of violence, which mostly affected girls, women, and people with diverse sexual orientations and gender expressions. The case is Macro Case 11. 90% of registered victims between 1957 and 2016 were women. 35% were children or adolescents when the crimes happened. Due to the JEP's remit, it will investigate gender-based violence against civilians committed by FARC members and security personnel, including army and police, but as yet not crimes committed by paramilitary forces. A World Health Organization report has warned of an epidemic of cesarean births in Colombia. Nearly half of births in the country are now cesarean sections, while the WHO recommends that the maximum for a country should be between 10 and 15%, due to the possible surgical complications of that procedure, both for mother and baby. Latin America is the region with the highest proportion of cesarean sections in the world, and Colombia tops the list. Singer Shakira's tax controversy has deepened as the Spanish prosecutor has lodged a second claim, accusing her of defrauding the Spanish state of nearly $7 million. She has opted to go to trial next month in Barcelona, where she faces an 8-year jail sentence. The case hinges on whether or not she was in fact resident in Spain during certain periods and whether she diverted money to companies in countries with low tax rates and high opacity. The president's communications office has accepted that the video they published of Gustavo Petro's speech to the United Nations General Assembly was edited after outlet Silla Vacía revealed that the applause being shown after his speech was actually applause received by US President Joe Biden. A contractor was blamed for the edit, a man who has been working for the Colombian government for 10 years. He has now been removed from his position. Those were your headlines for this week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is episode 489 of the Colombia Calling podcast. If you've been with us for many years,
You will know who this character is, who this personality is. But if you haven't, well, go back 4 years and you will find an interview with Diego Lacerna, who is a city councillor for the Green Party here in Bogota. And he's up for election again. So we're going to talk about these local elections here in Bogota with Diego himself. So after 4 years away, Diego, welcome back on the Colombia Calling podcast.
Thank you very much, Richard. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Well, thank you. You came, yes. But no, more importantly, it's congratulations to you because you are a new father. We won't say anything else, but major congratulations. It does seem like baby season. A lot of people seem to have newborns at the moment, but a difficult time for you because you're on the campaign trail and you have a newborn at home. How do you manage both things?
Yeah, I ask myself the same question every day.
Well, it's all good, though. I mean, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like becoming a parent, and you somehow make it work. You know, all of these busy things. People have done it for the ages. We feel like it's the hardest thing we've ever done, but then the next generation does it too. If you're watching on YouTube, Diego is in his green and yellow top, La Serna al Consejo. He is, as I said, the Green Party. The Green Party has obviously been around for some time now, and he is a city councillor. And I think we need to talk. Well, first and foremost, the elections are on the October 29th. Unfortunately, Diego, I'm going to be out of Colombia. I won't be able to vote. I mean, this seems to me like a really lost opportunity, but we know you're going to do fine. You've been a councillor now for 4 years. Let's talk a little bit about what a city councillor in Bogota does.
Okay, Richard. So first, it's a shame you won't be here on October 29th, but...
I'll be on a boat.
What does a city councillor do? Technically, two things. One is propose bills for approval or denial by the rest of the city councillors, or vote on bills proposed by the mayor. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. That's called proyectos de acuerdo, actividad normativa.
Okay.
The second formal task that we have is debates. We invite different secretaries that work for the mayor to debate topics that we're interested in for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. So urban development, the historical landmarks, sex education, the valorización works, constructions, Transmilenio, security in Transmilenio, people who skip who don't pay their fare and go into the system, all that, those types of topics we discuss here at the City Council. Mm-hmm. And sort of informally, but that's probably the majority of our work, mm-hmm. is being a bridge between the needs of citizens and the city offices that are supposed to fulfill them. So a tree is about to fall over my house. Somebody help me cut it before it falls. So they call the city councilor, and the city councilor calls the agency, and they do it. I don't have a spot for my kid in my local public high school, so they're sending him an hour away by bus. Please help me. I'm going to deliver a baby, and I don't have anywhere to deliver it. Where should I go? Please help me. We deal with these types of requests daily, and they take up a lot of our time. But that's the job.
Yeah.
So those three things.
So you kind of also like checks and balances on what is discussed in the mayor's office. You make sure that if things are agreed, that they are carried out.
Yes. So in the two first topics, in the bills, well, we can deny the mayor what she's proposing, or in the future he. So she's asking for a loan, if she presents the budget, if she wants to create a new city department, and we say no, she can't do it. And in debates, well, they're mostly checks and balances. You're basically analyzing what the city government is doing, pointing out what doesn't work and suggesting how it could.
So we've got, I mean, Claudia Lopez is the current mayor. She will be the outgoing mayor, obviously. Green Party candidate, first woman mayor, I think, apart from Clara Lopez, I suppose, who was in for a little bit.
Clara Lopez was never elected. She was appointed.
Yeah, it was just a replacement. Obviously, you know, alternative and so on. You're of the same party, so of course you're going to say that she's been a great mayor. But if we read the newspapers, people aren't, you know, I mean, the press is one thing here in Colombia, but they've been pretty unpleasant to her these last 4 years.
No, so I wouldn't say she has been a great mayor, Richard. You know, you can have differences in your own party. I think these 4 years have been particularly difficult for Bogotá. Yeah. We had the pandemic, we had El Paro Nacional, the national strike. We've had a massive influx of very, very poor Venezuelan immigrants that the city has had to take care of. We had the riots in September of 2020, where they burned down like 40 police stations around the city. So it hasn't been an easy period. Claudia, I think in general, has been responsible. Mm-hmm. I think one of the main problems Bogota has is that the incoming mayor tends to snuff everything that the previous mayor did and start from scratch. And Claudia has been responsible in that respect, continuing the main projects that were developing when she arrived in office. I think she has developed an interesting idea for the city, working around something called Manzanas del Cuidado, mm-hmm. which are like...
Is it like a community watch type thing where you look out for...
Yeah, they're
area?
Like hubs of... They're hubs of social services,
okay.
Designed particularly to take a load off women's backs, that they can leave their child with somebody while they exercise or study or just relax, mm-hmm. Or that they can leave an aging parent or a disabled relatives and somebody will give them a hand for free and at the same time be surrounded by social services that allow them to develop their capabilities, rest, etc.
Well, that's a very human, that's a very community-oriented thing, and which I haven't heard about, and I read the papers. We don't hear enough about these things. So, I mean, Claudia, as you said, she hasn't been a great mayor, let's be honest, but at the same time, she's continued the projects of the last mayor, which is unusual here in Colombia. Normally, it's the new guy gets in, and it will be an old white guy again this time, because that's all of the options. They normally get in and say, no, let's turn it all around. This is my plan. And it sets us back another 4 years or longer. And of course, we can't help but mention the debate that will continue forever, and it will be the metro. Now, for Bogota's metro, ground has been broken. Things are being done. I know that there's the depot in Bosa, so in the extreme, is it the west of the city? Yeah, the extreme west. I know there's a depot is there, and you see other works going on. Are we going to wait another 25 years? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. First, well, I'm hopeful that the second round of this election will land in Oviedo, and hopefully we will not even have the debate in the second round. Mm. But even if Bolívar, who's the candidate supported by Petro, goes to the second round, he'll talk about it and talk about it. But in reality, I think he's not stupid enough to stop it, because it would not only be a huge harm for the city, but a very serious legal risk. And I don't think this guy who lives comfortably in Miami most of the time is going to sacrifice his personal life over a reckless decision like that.
But that, I think that's an important moment to introduce the candidates that I am aware of course, Gustavo Bolívar of the Pacto Histórico, so backed by the president, Gustavo Petro. Is it Luis Carlos Oviedo? What's his, Luis Fernando?
Juan Daniel.
Juan Daniel Oviedo, who is like Bogotá con todo, or con todo por Bogotá. Independent. In fact, he went to Mompós when he was planning his campaign. He went up for a month. So there you go. he didn't stay in a hotel or in my house. But anyway, never mind. Then we've got Diego Molano, a former minister of defense, and prior to that, head of the ICBF, so the sort of child welfare agency, most well known for being Minister of Defense during the Estallido Nacional, and especially in Cali. So the, as you say, the unrest in the country. Robledo, I guess he's with the Polo Democrático. Robledo.
Party called Dignidad.
Dignidad. Molano, as we didn't mention, he's the Centro Democrático. So the
He gathered signatures. Nobody wants to run for Centro Democrático.
Yeah, okay. So but he'll get their signatures. Votes, though. I'm getting this all wrong. Yes. And then Lara, who is son of a former politician who was killed. You've got him as well, Lara. And then, of course, we've got Galán, son of a former politician who was killed as well. So, but leading the polls, I think at the moment is Galán, no? In the Nuevo Liberalismo?
Yes. So far, Galán is ahead. And in second place is Gustavo Bolívar, with Oviedo very close to Bolívar.
So Gustavo Bolívar, I don't know. I mean, wherever anyone's politics lie, he just doesn't come across very well. I mean, that's my most civilized way of putting it. And if you say he spends most of his time living comfortably in Miami, is that really the kind of person? I noticed that little dig. I noticed that you put that in there, of course. But you have your candidate. You tell us why you are backing then Oviedo. I saw a photo with you on Twitter today. I think you were eating a piece of corn, or he was.
Yes, we both were.
Okay.
So first, why I'm supporting Oviedo. Oviedo is the former head of the statistics department in Colombia. This is his first incursion in politics. So I think he combines two values that I appreciate and that ultimately made me support him. Mm-hmm. One is that he has a technical background, that he's not just going to talk and talk and talk and talk with no evidence behind it, that he's not going to propose things that he can't do. And the second value that I appreciate a lot is that he is relatively politically independent, and that he is not, entangled by all the alliances with the local political parties that end up in the huge, I don't know how to say that in English, the pork barrel politics, where you vote for the mayor and the mayor gives you public positions. A big part of what's wrong in the city is the interruption in the main projects. And the other problem is just that most of the politics in Bogota happens like that. Yeah. Politicians exchange their votes for public positions.
Contracts.
Yes, so there's a very poor public debate. Most of the things, whatever mayor proposes, go through the city council. And this will be a progressive change, but I hope Bogota will be less involved in those kinds of politics as time goes by. And I think Oviedo is the best option to do that.
Okay.
I was exaggerating about Bolivar. I don't know exactly where he lives. He has a house in Miami, but the point is he lives comfortably. He's not going to risk his whole future over stopping the metro project in Bogota, I don't think.
Now, Oviedo famously talked about sort of like an immersion process. I think, was it in Bosa that he went and he spent, is it a month living down there? And the reaction was, you know, we are not for immersion. There was quite a backlash, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, I don't think Twitter is the best measure of anything in Colombia. But yes, I'm sure some people thought it was offensive, and other people were happy that that a candidate, a well-known person, is going to spend some time in one of the poorest districts in Bogota. So I'm sure it went both ways.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the, you know, the main issues, obviously, that everyone will talk about and other talking points. Transport, of course, you know, Transmilenio Metro, etc. Transmilenio, for those of you who don't know, is the bendy bus system that was, for me, redundant as soon as it came out. It was made for the year that it was launched, not for 2023. It has not grown and has not been, let's say, it is not the sole solution for Colombia's transport, Bogota's transport issues. You know, a metro, better bus systems. But the other main issue that needs to be addressed is that of security. People feel, in the Gallup polls and the Invamir polls, that security has worsened in Bogota. Has it worsened, or are we just a bit more aware of it happening?
Well, it's hard to tell because, the official numbers are not as concerning as reality feels. But yes, I don't remember such a level of concern about security in many years in Bogota. I tend to trust more people's perceptions than the official numbers, because many people don't report the crimes they're victims of. Mm-hmm. It never makes it to the official numbers.
Yeah.
Why that's happened? Well, I discussed some of the things that have happened in Bogota during these 4 years, a few minutes ago. No doubt Bogota is more poor, more disorganized today than it was 4 years ago. Some people put all that responsibility on the mayor. I differ. I think any mayor who would have had to deal with these issues would have had similar results. But yes, we need to react to that. It's not easy because most of the responsibility is in the national government, for the police in particular, for the judicial system. It doesn't depend on the city. It mostly depends on the national government. And the national government has very little concern for the security, not just of Bogota, but of the country. That's just a topic they are not comfortable with. And that is mostly operative. It has to do with executing strategies, not with discourse. And the national government is very good on discourse, very poor with execution.
You've said something that the analyst from Columbia Risk Analysis, Sergio Guzman, has repeated many times on this show. It's very good at dialogue and discourse, very bad at execution. And the left is never particularly good on security. Anywhere in the world, the left is not good on security. Let's just be honest about that. Would there be a better solution if, and I know this is a big question for you, I'm afraid, but this is, we have the Minister of Defense, Ivan Velasquez, and one of his remits was to take the police out of the defense ministry and put them into the interior ministry, surely, where that the minister is Alvaro Leyva. Is that's right? Would that help the policing?
It would help in one sense. It means that the mindset of the police is still very much associated with armed conflict in Colombia. So many policemen had to fight the guerrillas or the drug traffickers, and it's a different type of conflict than what you have to deal with in a city like Bogota every day. So there's still all sorts of human rights abuses that I believe are linked to that mentality, linked to the conflict. Passing the police from the defense ministry to the interior ministry would have the purpose of making it a more civilian force, better trained in human rights issues. But it wouldn't necessarily mean that they would be more effective fighting crime. So I agree with that proposal. It's been being discussed for a while in Colombia, but it won't help solve crime in Bogota.
No.
It might help solve human rights abuses, but that's only part of the problem.
I think, as you say, but it might be symbolically significant, taking it away, you know, moving it across. Okay. Well, let's talk about you a little bit here, give you an opportunity to, you know, sing your own praises and your success story. When we first talked all those years ago, you admitted to me that you don't really like talking in front of a crowd of people. Now you've done 4 years of talking in front of a crowd of people in the Consejo. Are you getting more comfortable with this, I hope?
Yes, I'm certainly more comfortable. I wouldn't say I like it still, but I'm probably better at it.
Well, it's a strange career choice for someone who doesn't want to talk in front of people and negotiate. But never mind. You've done it. You've got better. You say you don't have to enjoy it. And when we talked, and I remember part of your campaign, and it was about Bogota needs more nerds. I mean, you're there in your thick spectacles, so that's your part of your calling card. But you talked about the need for, like, improving and cleaning up Bogota's rivers, because you saw that the water system was connected to everything. So, like, you know, health, the environment, and of course the desirability of living in a city. Has there been any proper advance on this in these last 4 years? Because that's a tough one.
Yes, very little, unfortunately. We've had one big fight is the construction of the treatment plant that would clean 70% of the dirty water that goes into the Bogota River. We approved the financing. The studies are finished. They have an environmental license and everything. They just need like a check, a good to go, a signature from the finance ministry. And the finance ministry, Petro's Ministerio de Hacienda, has refused to approve the loan to build the treatment plant. So there has been no progress on that front. Unfortunately, it's unbelievable. Petro speaks and speaks and speaks about water and the sustainability goals and the environment. And in something as basic as this, his government has also been an obstacle. So no progress on that front. What the little progress we made, I think, in this respect, is that a regional government, in quotation marks, was approved, created. So this is called La Región Metropolitana Bogotá Cundinamarca.
Right.
And it's like another layer of government between the local governments, the state governments, and the national governments. And the idea is to be able to coordinate public policies in Bogotá and its neighboring municipalities. So that, for example, decisions regarding water, which do not only affect Bogotá, can be taken jointly. One of the things that this Región Metropolitana could do in the middle run would be to create a regional water and sanitation public company, which would help organize a lot of the imbalances in how water how do you say this, and how you find clean water around Bogota and how you clean it after you use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, and so if you make this regional like municipality with Bogota, does this also extend in the new project, hopefully, that's going on, the Tren de Cercanías? Because I know that's one of the issues, is that the division between the sort of metropolitan area of Bogota and then the surrounding department of Cundinamarca. Is that going to get done as well?
Well, there's two projects like that in the short-term plan. One is Tren de Cercanías, a train that goes west to Faca and Busquera, well, the west of the city. That one's more advanced, mm-hmm. and it's been contracted by the state of Cundinamarca.
Okay.
So Bogota doesn't have that much to do with that train. And the other one, which is in its initial stages, is the one that goes north to Chía, to Zipaquirá. But yes, so you create this regional government so that there's no lack of coordination between the state and the city's government, like there is now, and with all the neighboring municipalities who all have different opinions about these sorts of projects.
Yeah, because it's that thing, isn't it? In the highway, when you're going out, is it the Carretera al Sur, whatever, or west, when you're going out and suddenly between Bosa and Soacha, it's unpaved. It's one section. You know, it's clearly nobody can decide. And it's not even like, it's not even 100 meters, but it's just this, it just stops. You know, you're like, come on, for the good of everyone, someone. And it can't be that expensive to just join them up. But it's typical, that one. Now, but before we get into it, and you've had another major success, and we'll get into that at the end. But what I see from you, you know, what I see from you on social media, you're on Instagram, obviously, and you're on Twitter and elsewhere. We've mentioned it. But what I see from you is that you have been very involved in let's say, the smaller things in Bogota that make life more enjoyable. So things like pavements. Things like road safety, things like, I would say, you know, making Bogota less dangerous, you know, in terms of a walking city, in terms of a more livable city. These are the things I see you doing a lot. You're very much on the ground and walking around. This is because I assume you walk everywhere. I assume you want it to be more of an international city on that level.
Yes. So the thing is, us city councilors, whether they're the second line of the metro or the first line, whether the Tren de Cercanías we were talking about or the treatment plant get built or not, do not depend that much on us.
Yeah.
We can talk about it all day, and some of my colleagues do just that, or we can try to focus on smaller changes that are valuable. Mm. So, for example, one of the things I did this term, which I'm very proud of, is pressure Transmilenio to create an app that tells you how long the bus is going to take to come to the bus stop.
So like in London?
In London, in most developed cities.
Yeah.
This is no like innovation in Bogota. This exists everywhere. But until I was elected, that did not exist. And you can use that app today to report bad driving by a certain bus, or the bus didn't stop at the bus stop, or it was dirty, or whatever. So that app has been downloaded by more than 800,000 people in Bogota today. So benefiting, impacting for the better the lives of 800,000 people is why I choose this job. That is the goal. You are probably talking more about the valorization projects, which are some like really traumatizing construction that's been going on in certain areas of Bogota.
Yeah.
116, 92, 94, 73, 79, 85, Canal Molino, Canal Cordova, 153.
Yeah, Pedagogica, around the back of the Pedagogica University. Yeah. I mean, we've just had 4 years of just these polisombras everywhere. So that's these kind of sheets blocking off works. It has made the city really look like it's on bricks.
Yes. And, well, basically what we've done is put the spotlight on what was going wrong in those projects and pressure IDU, which is the city office in charge, to, well, put pressure on the contractor themselves, sometimes kick them out, and finish those works for the time being. So 73 on behind Pedagogica is finished.
Yeah.
Finally, after 4 years of a lot of pain, they took off the polisombras, the green sheets, and it looks like a normal street once again. Mm. 85th, 79th, they're like that. Mm. 92 and 94 are still struggling along, among many others. But what we've tried to do is, first, like, reduce the harm. And second, really criticize how IDU works.
Yeah.
Like, infrastructure in Bogota is a nightmare. Yeah. And it's a nightmare because the city office in charge of it is a mess. Mm-hmm. And the way to change that is that the next mayor makes a plan of how it's going to restructure IDU, and hopefully we won't see so much chambonada. How do you say that in English?
I don't know.
Like slipshod or...
Yeah, slipshod. Slipshod is good. Slipshod work.
Okay, what else? You also talked about...
I think you've done the clubs. I want to know about the clubs. Tell me. These are these huge country clubs all over Bogota for... let's not beat around the bush, for the wealthy to come and enjoy open spaces, play golf, use tennis courts, swimming pools, and so on. You spearheaded a campaign to get these guys to pay taxes. Is that it?
They were paying taxes before, but the fight was the following. So in Colombia, the constitution says there's a rule regarding taxation. And the rule is progressive taxation. The more you have, you pay a bigger proportion of what you have.
Fair enough.
One of the local taxes that we have is called predial. It's like a real estate tax. You pay based on the value of your property, whether you have a house or you have a store or you have a factory. And the higher the price of the house, the store, or the factory, you pay a higher rate.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. But all commercial establishments in Bogota, a bakery, a hairdresser in Bosa, in Kennedy, in San Cristobal, paid a higher rate than these country clubs, than the country club, Club Los Lagartos, Club El Nogal, et cetera, et cetera. Even though those clubs are worth thousands of times more than the bakery or the hairdresser.
Before we do that, how much does it, like, say, a hairdresser or a bakery, a regular shopfront, how in Bosa or in San Cristobal, how much would they pay in predial tax?
Oh, so the rate was eight per thousand.
Okay.
That's the rate. The rate for the country clubs was 6.5 per thousand. So you don't know how much money they pay unless you know how much the bakery is valued for, or the country club is valued for. So it's not easy to say, like, with money, how, unless you're looking like at a specific case. Mm. But why, on whose mind does it make sense that the Bogota Country Club, that is valued in over ₱1 billion, pays a lower rate than a bakery in Bosa?
Yeah.
That just does not make any sense. So I propose to change it. And of course, my head was almost cut off by my colleagues, by the people I know who are members of clubs, and, well, some of the people who think like them. It took me 3.5 years to get this bill passed, and a lot of pain. But finally, we made the change so that the rule for progressive taxation applies to country clubs as well. Mm-hmm. The higher your value, the higher your rate. And since the city is going to receive some extra earnings from that change in the rates, we were able to take the real estate, the to take the real estate tax away. So they're going to pay zero all the museums and the theaters in the city. So it's an example of what Colombia should do carefully and rigorously. Have smart progressive taxation to increase revenue and redistribute better. And the fact that I was able to do something like that from the city council makes me very, very proud, because that's the type of projects that I came here to do.
That's interesting. So you got it turned around. Now the clubs will pay progressive tax rates, probably not as much as they should pay yet, but because it's a progressive thing. But educational facilities such as museums and theaters will now no longer have to pay tax, which again makes the predial tax, which makes perfect sense. And they can reinvest into the infrastructure and, of course, into the arts itself and so on. That makes perfect sense. Your policy, you know, 3.5 years, I saw articles which were very negative about you. I think there was one in El Tiempo and they slammed you. I can't remember the main newspaper. It must have been really hard to get that kind of coverage. But at the same time, and you know, you're Green Party, but it sounds like a plan more by the Pacto Histórico, you know, more by someone in the left wing.
Yes, and incredibly, they were not very supportive.
Really?
Some were openly against it.
I thought they would blindly back you on this one. It's a very...
Some did, some were supportive, but other city councillors from Pacto Histórico were all against it, did everything every time to sabotage the project, which is unbelievable. But yeah, well...
Were they members of clubs, maybe?
I don't think so. But their argument is that if you increase the taxes, for country clubs, one day they might say, like, we don't want to have the golf courses here. We should sell this off to buildings, to a developer. And there's a specific restriction in Bogota's POT, in the urban development plan, that says you cannot do that unless for every third of the area that you develop, you give the city two-thirds as public space for free. So if one day one of these clubs is like, look, I can't pay your taxes anymore, I'm going to leave to go to Chia, the city's okay, you can take your whole area, you can develop one-third in whatever real estate you want. And the other two-thirds are going to become open, free, public space, which I don't think is that bad of a result.
No, I mean, you know, public space and so on. Now, your campaign, Diego, it was 4 years ago, is Bogota needs more nerds. Now you have progressed, but the nerds have stayed. You said, los nerdos hacemos la tarea y hacemos bien. So nerds, we do our obligations, really, and we do it well. So listen to my listeners. Let's give you a little bit of a you know, anyone who's resident after a certain amount of time, foreigners indeed, can vote. If you haven't registered, I'm sure you're too late now, but if you can vote.
I think they register everybody automatically.
Oh, okay. So well, no, I was dead. I'm dead. Yeah. It's happened to me twice now. I'm dead. So, but this year I'll stay dead because I'm not here. So it's all right. But if you're a resident in Colombia, you can vote. There are two voting stations, I believe, for foreigners. One of them's in the Sergio Arboleda. But of course, you look up online and they'll tell you where to go. And so if you're in sort of, yeah.
Or if you need help, I'm willing to help you.
There you go. Get in touch because he wants your vote. So, but now you are number four on the list. Is that what we should be looking for?
I'm number four for the Green Party.
So when
you go to vote for city council, there's just the party's logos and a bunch of numbers in front. The names are not there. So if you want to vote for me, you cross the Green Party's logo and then number four in front of it.
And the logo is a sunflower. on it. So there we go. So yeah, green and a sunflower. Number four, Diego La Serna. He has done stuff for Bogota, guys. I mean, you heard it here. I gave him some hard questions too. Security, transport, realities, who, you know, different candidates and so on. In fact, you know, he has been very honest about the current mayor of his party, Claudia López. So there you go. This has not been a complete cakewalk for him. But, you know, I think it's interesting for my listeners to hear what a Bogota city councillor does. I think that's it, because we don't really see, you are the kind of like the invisible faces and the checks and balances of what goes on, the contracts and so on, you know, trying to make Bogota a more livable city. So, Diego, thank you so much for your time. I hope this was worthwhile. I hope maybe, you know, we can bring you a couple more votes there. I'm sure you'll be okay. Good luck on October the 29th.
Thank you, Richard. If your followers want to continue hearing about me and follow me on social networks, my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook are all at La Serna Bogota.
La Serna Bogota.
And about the nerds, one last thing, Richard, because it's not clear to everybody what the hell a nerd in politics is. A lot of people think it's like a pretentious position, like, you know, I'm the most studied, the smartest person around, and you should vote for me. And it's not that what we're trying to say. Basically, it's, look, many politicians in Colombia just talk and talk and talk without ever having prepared what they're going to say or read up on the background or whatever. Here is a group of people. I'm running for city council, but I have some friends running for ediles, which you also have to vote for on October 29th. And what we, the value added we offer is that we do not talk without knowing what we're talking about, that we study, and that we do not take positions just to get retweets or likes, but things that make sense for the city.
There you go. So the nerds are the ones who read up and actually know the minutiae of what the laws in Bogota and what should be done. So there you go.
Yeah, and if we don't, we just say we don't know, but we don't like pull it out of the hat.
There's a lot of that about pulling it out of, and I won't say the word, pulling the information out of somewhere. But so let's just say thank you to Diego La Serna for his time. As he said, social media at La Serna Bogota, Green Party number four when it's in the Consejo this 29th of October. Always a pleasure to talk politics. Always a pleasure to hear what a city councillor does and where they stand in terms of the central government, where they stand in terms of the mayor's office. And of course, Bogota being the capital, you know, it's, I mean, not to say it's more important than elsewhere, but there are many challenges ahead for the city. And I think that's what we need to discuss here. The city is the capital. It is the window to the world for Colombia, you know, one of the main, obviously the main city in that term. My friends in Medellin, please don't kill me for saying that, but it's just that there is a lot to be done here. That's the reality. There's a lot to be done. So, you know, vote and vote wisely, of course, this October 29th. Thank you again for listening. This has been episode 489. We'll be back next week with more information and stories about Colombia on this Colombia Calling podcast. And goodbye. The Colombia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website, that's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Columbia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolumbia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolumbia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.